Welcome to the 2013 Healing with Horace Telesummit, where we're gathering a group of our field's leaders to empower equine facilitators to expand their partnership with Horace. Our goal is to give you new concepts, activities, and inspiration to take your healing work with Horace to the next highest level this year. I'm your host, Dr. Jen. I'm a psychologist and founder of the Healing with Horace Collective. I live and play with my healing herd of 7 horses outside of Denver at the Happily Ever After Holistic Healing Horse Ranch. And today, I am most thrilled to have the exceptional Kathleen Barry Ingram as our guest, sharing wisdom about how to help your clients translate what they receive from a horse session into real changes in their lives. I'd say there's probably never a more important topic than that, right, Kathleen? So very, very welcome to have you today.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you.
Yeah. So before we dive into this exciting discussion, let me just tell everyone a little bit about you. Kathleen is a Tucson-based consultant, certified coach, lecturer, and educator specializing in assisting individuals in personal and professional growth, and of course, equine-facilitated experiential learning. And many of you know Kathleen because she was the co-creator of the Epona Apprenticeship Program alongside of Linda Kohanov in the late 80s. Most recently, Kathleen has developed an individualized mentorship training program in EFL. And the 6-month program is an intensive training and coaching program where each student receives individual mentorship and guidance. So that's just a little bit about Kathleen, and I understand we're going to delve a little deeper into the relationship that we have with the horses and ourselves today.
That's great, Jen. Can I make one correction?
Sure.
Linda and I didn't start working together in the 80s. That was my time at Sierra Tucson. We started working together in, I think we met in 99, and in 2002 we began the apprenticeship program, and the first class graduated in 2003. So it feels like the 80s, but it wasn't that long ago.
Oh, there's a whole decade went by. So,
okay.
Yeah, wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Well, before we do get started into your delicious topic here today, why don't you tell us a little bit about your way of partnering with the horses and what might make it a little bit different from some of the other models out there?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, and you said this, we all know that horses are very relational beings, which is why they make such good co-facilitators with this work. My background as a psychotherapist also has given me a deep understanding of how to really help people to understand the therapeutic alliance that we get with the horses, even though we don't call it therapy.
Mm.
I remember one of my students in England asked me how to talk about this, and she came up with something that I thought was a really good thing, and her first name is Claire, if she listens to this, and it was, she said, the equine experience creates a therapeutic alliance with the person and the horse with an outcome that can be therapeutic. So it isn't like it's therapy. And there's always a lot of controversy, as you know, in this field. You
mm-hmm.
have a therapeutic background. I do. And so the other thing that I do and the reason I became certified as a coach is I realized that as a mentor and a coach, it's really more about how we partner with our horses as co-facilitators.
Sure.
I'm not doing anything therapeutic, but I do teach the basic, what I call the psycho-spiritual scientific underpinnings of the work that are really important. So I give my students, whether I'm with them in the programs that I teach internationally or here in the States, or whether I'm working with someone individually in the mentorship program, I give them a lot of information about that before they even have an experience with the horse.
That makes a lot of sense, and it's funny. Yeah, being a psychologist, I have that background. And of course, I think of the relationship with the horse as healing, but I hadn't plunked it into the category of a therapeutic alliance with the horse, but that's brilliant because that's how the horse works its magic. And you're going to explain a little bit about how that's really happening today, how that is therapeutic for the client, right?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, why don't we go ahead and move into that a little bit? I know that you are famous for the phrase, the sacred space of possibility, which just always makes me tingle because it's such a delicious phrase. tell us a bit about, where we get started with all of this.
Okay. Well, actually, it was watching the horses, and it was actually a workshop that Linda and I were doing called Power of Authenticity up in Pagosa Springs, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And she came to me in her Linda way, and she knows this because I talk about this, and said, we're going to do something different today. And I went, okay. And it wasn't an active session, you know. It was a reflective session, which we later called it reflective. And so I was looking for a way to help people to what I call hold the sacred space, which is what the horses do.
Mm-hmm.
For the people that were in there without really going into what was happening and talking and all this. So my website, as you know, is called the Sacred Place of Possibility, a place to go to is the take on that.
Right.
So what I've noticed over the years is a lot of people use the phrase, but I've also noticed that some of them really don't understand what they need to do to make that happen. So the horse is going to do that pretty naturally as long as we are, you know, putting the horse in a safe place and we talk about all the safety things that we need to watch out for.
Sure.
But what I noticed is that people need to know how to manage their own thought processes, their own feelings, and this is a facilitator, and their own arousal level.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. A student that I was working with a few weeks ago, and I got to work with her horse in person, which is always lovely, of course.
Yeah.
And she loves her horse. And I was going as the, quote, client.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the session, and she was practicing the things that we were working on. And this happened to be a boundary setting, energy field setting exercise that we were doing. And I noticed that her love for her horse was radiating out of her heart, but it was affecting the opportunity of relationship that I would have with her horse.
That makes sense.
Uh-huh. And so, because I've seen this enough, you know, with people, and I said to her, we'll say her name, but anyway, I said, please take your heart and put it down to your feet. And she knew it. She's a horsewoman, you know, very accomplished. She knew what I meant.
Right.
And as soon as she was able to do that, her horse joined up with me, and we walked around this really big arena. So as the client, of course, we all know what that feels like when a horse joins up.
Yeah.
We came back and had the discussion. First of all, she was surprised that happened.
Yeah.
And we talked about congruence, you know. And I, because her horse really, by the way, had never done this work, you know how that is.
Right.
Do we train him? No. He's a retired racehorse.
Uh-huh.
Thoroughbred, beautiful. But what she got to see is how her love for her horse might be impacting the, again, what I was saying, and interfering with the opportunity for the client.
Yeah. Tell me, that is just, I'm so glad you brought that up, because so many of us, like myself, are blessed to work with a herd of our own.
Right.
That
we have your own herd. That's right.
That we're deeply in love with. Yeah.
Right.
And so
I kind of hadn't
thought about it that way. And so, I'm sure there's instances when that might happen. So tell me a little bit about how you could feel that, how you knew that was happening, or how that was getting in your way.
That's one of those hard things to explain, isn't it?
It is. Try your best.
I guess I would say that, you know, many of us that do this work are very kinesthetic, so we feel these things in our bodies, and it's that sort of taking that opportunity. Now, remember, I'm her teacher, so she was able to do it. But I can also tell you, I can see it sometimes in their eyes. And I also, but I guess probably what I saw before her was the horse. And
uh-huh.
He was confused.
Yeah.
Okay. It was a really big arena. She happened to be in the arena with me, which we both know sometimes you have to go in with your client if there's a safety thing. So I always talk to people about that too. I say, you create the safe place when you're in there with your client if you need to be in there. But you think of yourself as a tree with really deep roots.
Yeah.
And you just put those roots down. So it was that same sort of thing. And because the horse was looking at her, looking at me, you know, that kind of thing. Like,
what do I do? Remember,
he had never done this boundary exercise that we were doing.
Sure,
that makes
sense.
As soon as she did that, so I guess that was probably as always, I'm looking at the horse to see what's going on with the horse. Now, she learned that, and so what my students do in the mentorship session, and I'll talk more about that later, but or any of the people that I teach, they actually have a really specific way of looking at what's happening, and that's that limbic connection.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a bit.
Yes, and when we think about the horses being so relational, if we're facilitators, and even if we have like these, well, like a she of course loved her horse. She's my student, so she wanted me to have a really good experience, right?
Right.
But what I said to her is, I said, your good thoughts and your good feelings and your love for your horse and your respect for me, or whatever she was feeling for me at the moment, and probably a little bit nervous, you know, doing this in front of Kathleen. I said,
sure.
Those will affect the opportunity for me to have a relationship with the horse. So
that
is really important, and I've seen it over the years with people when someone would be like even outside the round pen. Well, this happens a lot. They're outside the round pen, and someone's in with your horse, right? So it's like you've got to be careful about zeroing in and saying to your horse, do a good job in your mind, in your heart, right?
Right.
Because you want to happen what's going to happen, right?
Exactly. You don't want to interfere with what needs to happen, with what wants to happen between them. Yeah, exactly. Tell me a little bit about how we manage our own arousal. I would guess we first have to be aware of it, and then...
It's simple. Like I would say to you, like right now, on a scale of 1 to 10, and you could talk about intensity, a thermometer. Some people, the word arousal, you know, affects them, but... I would say, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm asking you this in real time now, where would you say you are?
So if I sort of scan my body to see where that was.
Scan your body,
living.
Go down your body, just notice what's going on.
Yeah, I can feel that around my solar plexus, and I guess I would say it's about like a six and a half.
That would make sense, wouldn't it? Now, if you were going to give me a flavor of that 6.5, what I mean by that is, you know, is does it have some words to it or a color to it? What would you say it would be?
I'd say the first thing that comes to mind is a little bit of it's nervous energy.
Okay.
Because I'm talking to you for the first time.
Okay.
And it looks or feels a little bit like a ball of static.
All right. Good. Good description. Okay, so what I would say to you, and this is you as a facilitator, okay? So I'm your client and you're facilitating me. You also will be asking your clients the same questions. But what I have my students do is a pre and post. So they're doing this with themselves. Like, let's say they're going to take their client to the round pen to have an experience or the arena. I ask them to scan their body and look at where their feelings, the thoughts, emotions are, and also to see where their arousal level is. Because as we know, the horse is going to pick that up.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, what's really fascinating, and of course, you know, not as if I haven't seen this before, but it's just interesting always in the moment when we play with these things. As soon as and I was aware of it before I said it, but as soon as I spoke about it and gave it a name and gave it a description, it like went to half, you know, went down to like, say, 3.
Exactly.
And right. And so just bringing our awareness to something like that, perhaps, is grounding it in some way.
Yeah, and it's the same thing, you know, when you name what's going on in the body scan. And I'll talk a little bit about that because, again, I know a lot of people are doing body scans. And I remember when Linda and I first started to look at that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And what I noticed over the years is that a lot of times the facilitator would forget to ask the person, did it change when you talked about it, just like you said. And you just said it.
Yeah.
So I ask that question whether it's they're talking about a feeling or an emotion or, in their body, or whether they're talking about this thing that Daniel Siegel, do you know his work? He's written many books, but Mindsight is one of the books that my students have to read. Do you know his work, Daniel Siegel?
I don't think I have read his work.
Well, he's the one that I believe coined the term the window of tolerance. And what he's talking about is that anybody that's had, well, first of all, your window of tolerance was up high a little bit because you were excited. So that's why I wanted to know the flavor. Let's say you were at a 6.5 because you were a trauma victim. I want to know that too.
Right.
Or a trauma survivor, I would say. Excuse me.
Sure.
Victim, but, okay.
Yeah.
Now, I don't need to get into therapy about that. See, this is a place where you really don't need to ask too many therapeutic questions, and this is where a lot of people get in trouble, especially if they don't have the right training. But if somebody said to me they're 6.5, I want to know whether, is that excitement? Okay. Is it fear? Is it vulnerability?
Yeah.
I want to know those things. So I might ask some more questions. You told me.
Mm-hmm.
And then your description actually would make sense. I had to take a couple of deep breaths before I got on the call today.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh, my God, this is going to be recorded and, you know, all that. Please don't mess up, Kathleen, you know, kind of thing, okay? So and what you find, just like you said, is you will find people actually going down into that belly wisdom, which we know is where so much of our information is clearly and comes through. That, you know, whether you call it the dantian or the gut, you know, it comes into there.
Yeah. So being aware of that within ourselves is part of that, creating that sacred space of possibility right from the get-go, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. What is there anything else we need to know about, you know, creating and holding that space so that the horses can really do their work?
Well, yes. The other thing is that's really important is, and again, being a therapist, I was very used to working with what they call projection and transference.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also when I was, you know, I've created a series of questions that people have to ask about that. And if I'm not aware of my own stories or my own projections as a facilitator, I'm going to project some of those thoughts and feelings and ideas. Let's say, I see this sometimes with, I've worked with rescue horses, and thank God I've worked with a few people that really are really honoring of their rescue horses and really want them to be, you know, fully engaged in wherever they are right now. But I've worked with some people that have this, oh, what I call colluding with the victim, whether it's a
mm-hmm.
client or a horse. Oh, the poor horse. Oh, the horse can't do this. Or, you know, I'm not talking about like running around their own pen, but they have these ideas. And that projection that they have will affect that relationship that the client has with the horse.
Yeah, so any of the sort of, like you said, thoughts or beliefs that we have that we might be projecting onto the situation, it can color, and therefore I guess, muddy that sacred space of possibility. And so it sounds like you're saying we sort of want to bring as a neutral, what's the feeling of it? It doesn't seem like it's totally neutral, is it?
Well, I would say if I go into my body right now, I would say it would be a feeling of fullness in my, like, my belly area and an open heart.
Yeah, nice.
Okay.
So the
curiosity, I mean, the term, the sacred pace, space is my word, of possibility, is that it's that the possibility is there, and again, it's between your client and the horse.
Exactly. I'm pausing because I was just thinking, what a skill it is just to be able to, say, practice holding that space, just standing, say, you know, with your horse or whatever, that fullness, the open heart, the curiosity of what wants to happen, and how that's sort of a basic facilitator skill that people don't always talk about.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Starting from there, yeah?
Yes, yeah. And also, if I'm working with a group, I will ask the group to, and I'll describe this a little bit with the group.
Yeah, please.
And I'll ask them to do this because so many times, you know, when people are used to going to horse clinics, things like that, you know, they go in there and, you know, you've seen this, I know, because you've had this training, where people will go in and they're so sure the audience, quote, is going to just, you know, judge them and everything. So I always talk about creating the sacred space of possibility. I said it's a respectful way of honoring this person's process. And also you don't know what's going on. So I also ask people to use their own bodies as what I call a sensing device. And I say, you know, whether I'm teaching students or whether I'm working in a group, I mean, whether I'm doing a workshop, I say just jot down what you're feeling at certain points in the time, because that's a good way to give feedback, see?
It keeps
the feedback from being, you know, I told you, I saw, I did. It keeps it from I observed, I felt in my body when such and such happened. So that's really important. As you know, I'm sure you've done a lot of groups like I have, and you know how that can really get sideways when somebody starts judging.
Yeah. I love that you just bring in that reminder that this is a really useful thing for, yeah, when you're facilitating groups and people are watching other people, that's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, yes.
That they, you can teach them, you can show them how to hold the sacred space of possibility for the person. And what I love about that, besides just it helping the person be in a safe container, is that, as you're saying, when people are focused in on what is going on for them, then it becomes it's an experience for them. They're not just watching, but they are having their own experience.
Exactly.
And when they say I felt X, Y, or Z, it's about them, right? Not about the person. So
sure. And you also, and the thing is, if I don't set that up, this is what I tell my students: if I don't set that up before the person, you know, goes into the round pen and comes out, and then the person comes out, and this, you know, well-meaning person in the group is giving feedback, and it's not from I statements, it's you shoulds, then I'm going to shame that other person. And so I always tell my students, I want you to be very careful that you talk about this before.
Yeah.
Because then you could just say, just remember the I statements, the simple thing, or remember to speak from what you were feeling in your body, or whatever.
Sure, sure. I have noticed, yeah, that if I'm not super careful with how I set that up, that it's easy for the participants to not do that, yeah, to just kind of either kind of talk or, you know, they forget that there's a really rich, valuable experience of learning for themselves. So what advice would you give about really helping the people who are watching get that this is a learning experience for them, too, to take it seriously?
I always tell them is, you know, they'll have like a, you know, a journal or, you know, some paper. You know, when you're doing a workshop, you always give them plain sheets of paper in case they don't have a journal. What I always say is this is your opportunity to hone in on your nonverbal observations.
Mm, nice.
And so I worked with the Native Americans before, and when I lived in New Mexico, and I sort of say this tongue-in-cheek, but actually it's the truth. I hadn't had that much experience working with horses in this way, but I worked with the Native Americans, and I really had to learn to pause, and I had to learn to pay attention to some of the nonverbal cues, because there's a whole thing in the way the natives approach things that are, you know, there's not a lot of language. I'm from Chicago. I mean, I talk a lot, okay? So I really had to slow that down. And it's the same thing with the horses. So I ask people to look for the nuances. So I give them something. I guess what your question is and what I'm saying is I give them something to, quote, do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
And that keeps them engaged.
Yes, it keeps them engaged. And if it can apply back to themselves, of course, people are always.
Right. And as you know, when you're doing groups, sometimes the biggest experience they have is when someone else is in the round pen. And as a facilitator, that's why you always want a co-facilitator, because you can feel that.
Right.
Yes.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Awesome. So that's a little bit about I wanted you to just say a little bit before we move from this idea of the sacred space of possibility. You said that the horses are, you know, sort of naturally hold that for us. What's your understanding of how they're doing that? Anything you want to share on that?
Yeah, I have to think about that for a second. So I think as long as the person, and Linda and I certainly learned this, you know, over the years when we were teaching, is that we had to give people information about their own boundaries, their energy field, their body, the emotions. You know, Linda created something called the emotional message chart, which I know you've been exposed to and you work with also, because of the horse's abilities and the way that they're looking at what's going on with us. So we give people this kind of information. So if they have that kind of information before they go in, then they're more likely, okay, that's important, to be congruent, okay?
Yeah.
Now, we both know that, and this is where as a therapist, when I would see this work, I actually started working with Barbara Rector and Ann Alden before I even met Linda, and I would see this. Barbara would kind of call her one of the grandmothers in this field. But I would see this, and I would see what was going on, and I'd go, oh, okay, the horse is creating a space for someone to have an opportunity. And if the person's being incongruent, the horse will walk away from them sometimes.
Right.
And, of course, if it's dangerous, then, you know, that's when you need to jump in. But And then I could say to somebody, what was really going on? You told me you wanted to have this interaction with this horse and you were hoping that you would get joined up or whatever, you know, whatever their heart's desire was.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd say, well, I was feeling like the horse really wouldn't want to come to me. Well,
mm-hmm.
we know that that's a lifelong pattern when someone says something like that.
Right.
So I would say, okay, so how about looking at the possibility of maybe something being different? And they could drop into their body, and then maybe there would be tears coming up because maybe they had a lot of abandonment issues.
Right.
And as soon as they did that, what would happen? The horse would come.
Yeah, exactly. The horse would reengage once the person steps into the congruence.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. And they will many times, you know, not engage. I mean, and I believe that if you set this up from the very beginning when you're working with somebody, whether they're over the fence with the horse, if they're going in and doing the boundary energy field work, if they're doing reflective, that they can be much more successful when they go in to do active work, and it becomes more relational. I call it relationship in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, because a lot of people, what I've seen in the over the years, will drop into their horsemanship skills with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you need to know how to move a horse, but did you just lose the relationship?
Yeah. Exactly. So were you just saying that you felt it was much more effective which way, in the reflective or the active?
Both. What I'm saying is it's a thread that needs to be carried all the way through into the active. And what I've seen people do is they drop it when they either get into active work or they get someone on the back of a horse.
Sure. They drop the relationship thread so much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't you? I mean, I don't know whether you've seen that, but I've seen that. And so I've been looking at ways to really help people that I'm teaching, you know, the new facilitators that are coming along or people that come to me, you know, like you, after they've worked for a while, and say, okay, here's how you can get you can really help your clients better. Because, again, you know, this whole thing is, what's the translation? How do we translate this into their life? Well, they have to feel it in their own body.
Exactly.
And they have to understand when they make that disconnect. And then they have to understand that they can reconnect, because that's what will happen with people. We see it a lot. They'll disconnect, especially you see it in active work. You see it all the time. They disconnect, right?
Right.
And then they go down to, oh, well, it's not going to happen. And
right.
I could say to them, you know, outside the round pen, bring it back up again. Bring your heart into it. Bring your belly into it. And see whether you can get a connection. And, of course, a lot of times they can get a reconnection.
Right. And that's sort of just a little microcosm of life. And so the ability to reconnect when the connection is lost is sort of, you know.
Yeah, I wrote something called the yin and yang of it. I said, you know, the yin is the relationship, the heart thing, but the yang of it is the moving forward into life. And so you can see that. And that doesn't mean that you don't teach people, you know, what to do, where to stand, how to use the lunge whip. I'm not talking about that. That's important information for them to get, for them to be successful.
Yeah, they need some of the tools, and then they need to combine that with the energy, right?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, it's called a relationship in motion, because I would see people drop it.
Yeah, I love that. And, well, not I love that it's the reconnection that's really powerful, because people do that in their lives, and they need to know how to make that happen outside too. And so, yeah, let's shift a little bit into this limbic information that I think will lead us into understanding how to take it out of the round pen and into your life.
Okay.
So, yeah, tell me a bit more about what you've discovered about what's really going on for people in their changing.
Okay. I actually was doing some work with Lee Shambo, who lives in Washington State, and
mm-hmm.
she was introducing a book that I use all the time now called The General Theory of Love. It's written by three psychiatrists, and I don't remember all their names, but it's called The General Theory of Love. And in that book, they talk about the limbic connection. And there's three things that happen there. And as I was watching students, teaching,
uh-huh.
I'm going, oh, my God, this is what's happening. So I'm going to go through this a little kind of slow, but this is a way to help people to take it out of the experience, okay?
Yeah, so, please do.
So the umbrella would be the connection. And what I would notice is when, as soon as somebody was, let's say, doing an exercise that we call meet the herd,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they're standing outside the fence or, you know, watching a group of horses in a herd or watching one horse, is that there would you could tell if there was a resonance. You've heard about emotional resonance, right?
Right.
Okay, so you could see, it's really not just emotional, it's limbic. It's our whole limbic system, which as mammals we all have, which is that ability to connect, the limbic connection.
Yeah,
so
ahead. What does that look like, the limbic? What you said you could see it. What does it look like?
Well, I say see when I mean feel, so excuse me. But okay. I'm visual, and, you know, most of us like in this field are fairly visual and kinesthetic. Let me go to another exercise. Let's go to something that we call the reflective. It'd be easier because it's the horses in this case in the round pen, right? They're loose in a round pen or an arena, and the client is outside. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We start out that way, and we would be helping the client do a body scan, so with their back to the horse.
Right.
Can you visualize that? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm standing there as a facilitator, and but what I'm seeing sometimes
mm-hmm.
is I can see the horse starting to connect with the person. There's a resonance that's happening. Now, I may know about the horse, and I may also know part of the horse's story, and maybe the client shared with me part of their story. So there is that emotional resonance already happening.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes what I'll notice is that that happens way before the client ever goes in.
Mm.
Okay?
That's how they sort of picked that horse to go in with, maybe.
Yes, exactly. The horse picked them.
Right.
Sometimes, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I think I have an idea today. Well, guess what?
right.
A whole other story. That's a whole other story I can tell you about that. But that's all how I do group training is talking about a lot of that. But when that person then, as you as a facilitator, since that's who we're speaking to, I'm watching this and I'm seeing that there is some resonance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then the person turns around and looks at the horse, and in the model that we have, the person is asking for you're asking them for their intention, or we might call it their heart's desire, depending on what population you're working with.
Right.
It might sound too woo-woo for some people, but, you know, it's basically what you're asking for is not a goal. This is an opportunity for a relationship, okay?
Yeah.
So this person has this, and I always ask them to state it. And many times my students will say, what if they don't? I said, you know, very rarely does that happen.
Yeah.
Because the reason I ask them, then they might say, well, I don't know. But I've done a body scan with them. If they can't come up with something, I probably got something from the body scan. And all I need to do is ask a few questions, and they'll get it, okay?
Sure.
And it might be as simple as love or connection or whatever.
Yeah.
Certainly a metaphor would be getting on the back of a horse, and I say, we're not doing that, but you can have that idea.
Right.
They go in, okay? So the next step after you have resonance, okay, is regulation, which what we know is you and I are in regulation right now because there's a pause. We're breathing together. We know we see this with the horses.
Yeah.
So this is why many times, too, by the way, if someone's arousal level was really high and then they turn around and look at the horse, it
mm-hmm.
will drop. Just like you said, when you named it, it dropped.
Right.
It will drop.
And tell me a little bit about that. Will it drop when they look at the horse because?
Because they've already had a connection with the horse. And, well, and certainly in groups, it drops because they're not looking at the group anymore. The group is So, but they're connected with the horse.
Yeah.
And so I always want to look at that, too. So I'll ask them before they go in, on the scale of 1 to 10, give me what your arousal level is now. And most of the time, it'll be lower. Now, if it's higher, I want to know that because that's a safety thing. That's when I might have to go in, okay?
Right.
So go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking about the regulation. I got to read your wonderful article, which we'll make available for folks.
Uh-huh.
You were saying that limbic regulation happens through relationship. And, you know, I have a background in attachment theory, so
uh-huh.
I think of, oh, well, that's essentially how a baby learns, right, to regulate is through relationship.
Yeah.
And so I was just wanting us to say a little bit more about, how that's working with the horse. Do you believe that the horse's energy field is helping the person create the regulation,
yeah. And then when they go in, okay, when they're ready to go in,
mm-hmm.
And again, as facilitator, you're watching to see about the safety factors. When the person goes in, you will see the regulation, and you will see the breathing change.
Mm.
So many of us, especially if we're working with attachment, we don't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a grandmother, and I remember with my three grandchildren, I remember holding them and breathing into my belly with these little bodies on top of my chest. Wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
But that was regulation, you see.
Uh-huh.
And this is what, I mean, very, very often, let's say I have a client that has just really terrified of working with a horse, okay? And
right.
maybe they've had some trauma in their life, and it might have been with horses or whatever. And they might ask me to go in there with them in the round pen, okay?
Sure.
What I have done is I may say, okay, let's walk towards the horse, and we're doing it very carefully because they've already learned a little bit about energy fields and the horses, you know, big, big energy field and the boundaries. And they're walking, let's say, to the side of the horse. And if I can feel that their arousal's up, I may ask them, now this is it has to be in the right context.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me, if I put my hand on your back, can you put your hand on the horse?
Mm.
I'm helping regulate.
Mm, uh-huh, that makes sense. I find myself putting my hands out just into the air sometimes. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even need to really touch. But this is like an example of someone that would really have a lot of anxiety and be really frightened.
Yeah.
And then when I can feel the breathing, because the horse is doing it for them at that point, not for them, you know what I mean, with them.
With them.
That's relationship. Then I can back away.
Yeah.
And again,
that's sort of the nervous system being able to learn to regulate itself.
Exactly.
The limbic system, the nervous
system. And that's
system.
A whole, you know, all this information about neuroscience now and all these things that are coming through and these great researchers and therapists that are doing this work that are talking about relationship. The key is the relationship. And they're talking about working as a therapist in the office or whatever you're doing. But we get the opportunity to have the horse also co-facilitate this.
Yeah.
So the regulation's happening, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And how I see it is the regulation's happening, and they're having this opportunity. And whatever that is, I mean, they may join up with the horse. They may not even stand that close to the horse. It doesn't matter. Something changes.
Mm-hmm. Something shifts.
Now, I'm not going to know exactly what it is because, you know, normally when that's going on, I'm outside and I'm just holding that space and I'm really doing that heart to my feet thing. I'm not interfering.
Yeah.
Okay. Then they come out, all right? Now, this
yep.
is where I think a lot of people miss it. If you can see me, I'm pounding my knee like, you know, sorry.
This is where we're missing it.
Teacher's coming out. Well, your opportunity as a facilitator is to help them with something called limbic revision. Because
nice.
This is where you go up to the neocortex, okay, because we do speak.
Right.
And you ask the person what happened in there, and they get, you know, they share with you, okay.
Uh-huh.
And then you help them, I call it helping them finding the nugget. Some people will come out right away, and they know, oh, my God, and da-da-da-da-da, and they go into this whole thing.
Right.
Another way to keep it from going into therapy is when people start getting into the big story of it, you know how that
mm-hmm.
happens?
Yeah.
I'll say, can you tell me what happened with the horse today?
Today.
Again, you're taking him back to the moment with the horse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're asking what's going on in their body. I always say to them, where's your body right now? How are you feeling in your body now? So their own body is their own sensing device, and I am going to get to how you can take this out, okay. But their own body is their sensing device. So when they come out and you're asking them a few questions, they
mm-hmm.
have an opportunity to have a revision as to maybe how they see relationships.
Yeah.
Maybe this was the person, you know, that didn't think the horse would join up with them. Remember that attachment
mm-hmm.
piece, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, as a facilitator, okay, but what I saw today was you and, what's one of your horses' names, Jennifer?
Oh, Charm.
Okay, you and Charm were joined up today. You were connected to her. How did that feel?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, we both know it. That's like, you know, that's just the icing on the cake for us as facilitators.
Right.
You know, that's why we keep going back and doing this work.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's your opportunity, though. So what you say to that person is, okay, I want you to take a breath and feel that feeling again in your body. And sometimes they'll say, close your eyes, and go back to that feeling that you had, that those moments with charm. And they go back. And I'll say to them, I want you to track that feeling, and I want you to notice that. And if I'm working with someone, I have an opportunity to work with them like in a week or 2 weeks, then I'll say, I want you to notice that feeling, and I want you to notice that in your body. Because you're going to have opportunities throughout this next week or 2 weeks to actually have, to see whether you can play around with this.
Yeah.
And then that helps them to see whether they're the ones that disconnect before because they're so sure that nobody wants to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
Or it also helps them to find out, who they might have an opportunity to maybe trust, not like they trust somebody right away, but.
Right, right.
Boy, you know, when I talked to Jennifer at work the other day, it felt like talking to Charm.
Right. So that's the opportunity you feel like sometimes we miss as facilitators is to help them sort of anchor this into their
anchor.
Into their body and then begin to play with the feeling, the awareness of the feeling in their life outside of the round pen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is there anything more you'd like to add about that, Pete?
Well, you know, that article that one I sent you is the implicit knowing, and you know, this is from other researchers, not Kathleen, but that 90% of our knowing is implicit. So in other words, that's why experiential work is so important. It's in the body.
It's in the body.
You know, as a therapist, before I got into doing this, I would always, you know, send people to body workers. I would teach them Qigong. I would do a lot of different things with people because I worked with a lot of eating disorders, and I would see that they weren't in their body.
Yeah.
You know, they learned to dissociate to survive, which is fine.
Right, right.
At certain points in your life. But anyway, it's that implicit knowing. The explicit piece is what you as a facilitator have an opportunity to help them to put into words.
Sure.
Another reason why we always ask someone to journal after they've had an experience, because as you know, if they don't, they'll lose it.
Yeah. So there's a really unique opportunity, say, once they come out of the round pen or whatever the experience is to sort of marry the implicit, the feeling that they experienced, with the explicit, the words, the understanding.
Yes.
And then an invitation to take that out into the world and play with it.
Yeah. And see, that's when you go into the limbic revision, because maybe their whole life, and, you know, you hear people say, well, this always happens, or, you know, when they use always and never, you know that there's something there, excuse me, that was really ingrained early in their life that, you know, they weren't worthy or whatever it was. It's an opportunity to keep it in a coaching way and not into a therapeutic way because you're giving it back to them.
Right. Nice. Talk to me. You were saying that's how the revision happens. Because talk to me about the difference between the explicit knowing, the words, as we all know, I think, that are in this field. Like the words themselves, if we were just to get the knowing without the experience, doesn't seem to create, I'm guessing, limbic revision. It doesn't. There's a new knowing, but it doesn't translate, say, into our experience in the world. Right. That's why we're kind of all doing.
That's why
this
we're
work.
So excited about doing the work with the horses.
Right,
because
so,
we can watch that in the moment, and we could see it happening, you know. And so they have that feeling in their body. You know, it's what I would tell people is it gives them an opportunity to create a new neural pathway, and it's sort of like they had this super highway to this is how people are going to respond to me in my life, right?
Yeah.
And so they would have a feeling or an idea or a thought that this is how people are going to respond. But you as a facilitator say, okay, that might have been in the past or up until now, but what I saw today was you had this. And so you can start to create a pathway, a new pathway, like a little, maybe a little narrow path to a different way of being.
Mm-hmm.
That's the revision. And if they themselves then are willing and are anxious to start tracking that, you know, in their life, they will start to have a fuller life and more opportunities for relationship. They will widen what Siegel calls the window of tolerance for different things. Their life will become bigger.
Right.
Whatever they're talking about, whether it's in relationships or a new job or any of these things.
So help me make sure I understand. So it seems like having the implicit feeling and the explicit words, say, wrapped up, is like a seed. say, a seed that you've planted into the limbic system that has the potential to, well, it's already revising a little bit through that experience, right?
Yes.
But as we know, super powerful experience, when we leave, if we don't find a way to make the seed grow, it kind of lays dormant for a while.
Well, because you need the repetition. You know, it's like...
You need the repetition, Talk to me about that.
Well, I was actually talking to my daughter about this the other day. I was telling her I was going to have this call with you, and she's a speech therapist. And she said, oh, I know what you mean, Mom, because a lot of times, you know, to go to these great conferences, and the person's a really good speaker, and you get all excited, but then how do you take that into your life and make the changes?
Yeah.
I said, well, you need to have the practice. And so what I was telling her is, I said, the thing is that I can see what's going on with the person and the horse is that, and this is the coaching part, I could work with somebody, for instance, with a horse experience, and I can coach them on the telephone for 3 or 4 months on that one experience.
Yeah.
Because it's going to keep coming up again.
Uh-huh. And it does take a while to sort of deactivate the old limbic system, the pathway, and make a new take that new connection. And by repetition, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and then it's more likely to be activated instead of the old one. But that does take time, and it sometimes seems like clients, are not patient. How do you work with that aspect?
Well, I say, how long did it take to develop this? How old are you? I don't necessarily do this with all clients. I don't. I always talk about this with my students. So, I talk about the Freudian term is repetition compulsion.
Mm.
Remember that term when we were in school? Okay. What I said, I know that at times we thought that was negative, but I see it as a positive thing, because I see it as we have this compulsion to keep repeating.
Yeah.
And so what I say to people is, you have a compulsion to keep repeating these other habits, these more negative habits that haven't really gotten you what you wanted. How about thinking about changing that and having the compulsion to repeat this one particular experience that you had, so that you create that, and that's a creation of that new neural pathway?
Yeah. One way I've been playing with that, because it is easy for people to leave, and if they don't have it written down, or they don't sort of feel an internal commitment to say, play with it, play with it afterwards,
yes.
It's easy for it to just kind of poof, even if it's really powerful, within a week or two.
Yeah.
One thing I've been playing with is helping clients take that feeling that they had, that new feeling, the new seed of change, of possibility, and put it into what I call a mudra, which is a movement.
Yes.
So I ask them to come up with a movement. Maybe it's a series of three things that help you step into that feeling. And then I just invite them to play with that mudra to help them connect with that feeling, say, over the next 1 or 2 weeks between
Beautiful.
Sessions, just as a way to help anchor in that new neural pathway. Yeah. Is that one way we might be able to just encourage the continued playing with of the new?
Yeah, because they can do that any place. You're talking about like the mudras that you would see like in East Indian thing with the different hand movements?
Yeah, that's the word, but it's a whole body thing. So if, say, you felt acceptance and usually I invite people to think of three words that describe whatever the experience was, and then to think of a natural movement, like maybe it's your arms going out or up to the sky or up to your heart, but like a movement that helps you feel that same feeling so that you can then step back into that feeling. Like you said, can you remember how you felt about charm? So it's a way to a way to anchor it in your body so that people can revisit it. It's because I find that people need a little help just making the practice of it.
Yes. I guess that's one of the reasons that I love doing the coaching, and I really love being a psychotherapist. I want to say that. I did it for a long time. What I've seen, though, is that with the coaching, the very beginning, the contract is, this is about a relationship.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I actually do a workshop called Transforming Compassion Fatigue Through the Way of the Horse, and it's for people that are healthcare providers.
Uh-huh.
Because, we sometimes, as a therapist, you would actually find yourself doing more than your client.
Right.
So, but in the coaching contract, it's like, this is the relationship we have here.
Uh-huh.
And here's the parameters on the relationship.
Yeah.
So, in other words, it keeps you from working harder than your client.
Right.
You know that old
because it's
fun.
An easy way to hand it back to them and say, here,
you
go.
You become more horse-like. Yeah, hey, this person's not engaged. I'm going to walk away. I want to go to that bale of hay over there. You know?
Right.
So
well, I know
it's
that.
Go ahead. No, I just said it's. I think of myself as being a horse lots of times.
Yeah, I love that.
What would a horse do?
Yeah. And they wouldn't. They really don't overwork for the client, do they? They won't take. They don't take it on and decide it's. You know, they have to make it happen. They're willing to let that go.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, our responsibility is to make sure that if the horse does take on too much, I was just talking to someone about this yesterday, that we really watch that so that the horse has an opportunity. I always say take them out of the lineup if you're doing a workshop. You know, they have, it's like, oh, no, they just did a big piece of work with so-and-so, so they're going to be out of the lineup, you know. So they have that opportunity to go back to grazing, so to speak. So.
Yeah, I think we do need to be aware of what the horses need to help shift any energies they may have taken on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you wanted to also share a little bit about, in relationship to this, the difference between psychotherapy and coaching, and how does that relate to what we've been talking about here? What's important for people to take away about that?
Okay. We've touched on it, you know, quite often in things, but I think it's basically about one of the key points is the relationship, okay? So it's not like I'm the therapist and I know more. So it's an agreement, it's a
mm-hmm.
relationship agreement, and this is what you know what happens. It's about uncovering or discovering, where psychotherapy is more about uncovering, going
mm-hmm.
back into history.
Right.
I mean, when somebody comes to me the first time, they may be giving some history because they need to.
Yeah.
But I don't need what I've seen is people that I've taught that are therapists have to really be conscious about going back into the uncovering part because they're so used to working that way.
Sure.
So what I do is say, you know, if it's more about discovering, and again, this goes back to the limbic opportunities, the connection and the revision and peace, is that if they're discovering, they're discovering it in relationship with the horse. So again, it goes back to their having the opportunity and the responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
And of course, because I teach this work and because I teach work to people that don't have the same kind of background that you and I have, I work with coaches and leaders and people that are body workers, you know, that want to do this work, I do
mm-hmm.
give them the basics of what happens in the psychotherapeutic pieces because
mm-hmm.
I want them to know what they may be up against, which is
sure.
why I always say to someone, make sure you have a Kathleen or a Jen in your corner if you're doing this work, because you may come up against something that you're not equipped to handle.
Yeah.
So that's another piece I always do too, is make sure that they have a therapist or someone that has the experience to use for supervision or mentorship. Okay.
That makes sense. In case trauma or dissociation or some of the those sorts of things happen.
Because, mm-hmm. because that's where I think people get in trouble, is if they don't understand that might be going on.
Yeah,
and I could go on and on about that because I've been teaching for so long about people that have gotten themselves into situations. But I believe if you can keep it more in the coaching and the relationship in the here and now with the horse, then you can keep it safer for your client. And if they have, you know, a trauma background or issues, and you've got somebody that's in your corner that understands more how to handle that, then you can also refer them to that. You don't dump them, but you say, how about if we... Because as a psychotherapist myself, that's how I got in this field. Barbara Rector asked me to come and talk about what she called taking therapy into the barn.
Mm.
And that was in about 1994.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a name for this stuff yet.
Right.
And, you know, and I did that with her, she and Ann Alden, for a couple of years, and it was in 99, I believe, late 98 or 99, that Linda and I, you know, met.
Right.
But I always say to people, I was a therapist that saw the differences. You know, I was that person.
Uh-huh.
And so it's an opportunity to, some people get trained in coaching, and that's important. Some people are trained in psychotherapy. But it's an opportunity to me, EFL is more of a coaching opportunity than a therapeutic opportunity.
Sure, and that's talk to me. I'm just wondering. I'm having a thought about the psychotherapy versus the coaching and the limbic revision.
Yeah.
It seems like it can work on either level. If you're doing coaching or therapy, say with the horses, the limbic revision is all still possible.
Yeah. I'm just always really careful because I have seen people in the past who actually say that they're doing equine facilitated psychotherapy and they don't have the training.
Yeah.
And it makes me very nervous.
Sure.
So I probably overemphasize the experiential part of the learning, you know, the experiential learning. But certainly, you know, psychotherapists, and we know many, you know, that are working in this field. Again, since I did that, I had a large practice here in Tucson, I understood the power of work with the horses. And I also saw that it was that experience, that implicit experience in the moment, in that experiential setting, that made the big difference. So
yeah, ultimately it's the present moment, the experience you're having in the present moment, that's healing, I guess.
Exactly.
Right,
well, and that's
right.
Where, you know, that's the authentic experience. It's not the, you know, the false self that comes up and gives you all these other ideas that this should happen or why didn't it happen, and, you know, we go back to that. And also what I do is a lot of times when I'm working with people is they'll say to me, how do we keep them out of the story?
Yeah.
I get that question all the time. And
yeah, what's your answer?
Well, what I say is take them back to the horse.
Yeah.
Many times, you know, and if for some reason they are really, let's say you're working just one-on-one, it's a little bit easier, but if somebody's getting into the story, you can walk them back out to work with your horse.
Uh-huh.
You know, take them back to that experience. You don't negate what their history was, because as you and I both know, if we're working with trauma people and people that have had a lot of, you know, background, sometimes they need to tell you the story in order to release it. But what I've seen, and I saw this in my practice before I ever worked with horses, is a lot of therapists would collude with the person's victim.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I called it.
Yeah, and I like
in other
that
words,
phrase.
They would collude with their victim, and they didn't really, the client just stayed, excuse me, their story kept them stuck.
Yeah, yeah, the retelling of the story then becomes part of the problem.
Yeah, so there's a certain point where the story is told, and that there's a graceful way to do it, and then you're honoring that. And if you're really in that sacred space with people, they'll feel that you're listening.
Yeah.
You know, that's that deep listening. They'll feel the listening. But they also will know that you want to encourage them to have new possibilities.
Yeah, one of the things I try to do when that starts to happen is to bring them back into the body and what that story
exactly.
feels like.
Exactly.
But
yeah, where
yeah.
is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is a challenge. It can certainly be a challenge because people almost come expecting that they get to tell the story or that it's about the story.
Yeah, and when I read Daniel Siegel's book, Mindsight, he talked about the concept of feeling felt. And he said that a good therapist is able to help the client to feel felt. In other words, that's that deep listening, that's that pause, okay? And so I have said this to people before. I just lost you. I don't feel you anymore.
Mm.
And I really want to be able to connect with you, and I just lost you. And they go, what do you mean? I said, well, you're giving me this story, but I don't feel you now.
Mm.
And they'll go, oh, yeah, I was going into this whole thing about what happened in the past and what I thought was going to happen in the future. And I'll say, okay, can you come back?
No, yeah.
Can you come back?
I love that. Yeah, that's a wonderful, another wonderful way to do that. And it does seem like that's as a way to wrap up. Yeah, I usually think of it as feeling seen, but I love the idea of feeling felt. It's sort of the same thing. It's just, you know, a slightly different twist on it.
Yeah, well, that was, Siegel came up with it, and it was like, as soon as I read it, it was like, oh, my God, that's it.
Yeah, and that's so healing. And I think the horses have a way of people, right, of people being, of offering that feeling felt or feeling seen. And it does seem like it's a really big component of what's healing around them. And so thank you for reminding us about that.
Yeah.
And it is really all about that. I love that you're sort of reminding us that at first I thought, you know, we always get into saying that the implicit is sort of better, but I love what I sort of, well, part of what I'm taking away from this is it's the combination of the implicit with the explicit and then the invitation to take that out into the world that really has the greatest possibilities for anchoring change into people's lives.
Yeah, because, you know, we're given these great neocortexes, you know, we're given these great brains. So it isn't that we don't use them. You know, Horse Spirit Connections, where I work up in Toronto, Canada, they did an interview with me a couple of years ago. It's on my website. But I talk about that whole sense of, you know, that the information comes in, and again, this isn't Kathy, but this is, you know, research. It comes in through our heart and our guts first, and then it goes up to the neocortex.
Right.
So, and this is what the horses are doing. They're, you know, they're reading this. They're reading us this way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's why they're such masters at the incongruence. Because somebody could be saying they want to do something one way. You know, their thoughts really are going that way, but their body's saying, uh-uh.
Uh-uh, yeah. And being able to point that out is kind of one of their master skills.
Yeah, I always talk about it. I use the Johari window, which is another concept that came out of the treatment field, actually. But there's a place in there, and it's a quadrant of four. And there's one that is the blind side. You know how your client might be blind to something? And what I see is that the horses shine a light on that outdated behavior or thought process without judgment.
Very nice. Yeah. They help us see that blind side without us feeling judged about
it.
Because
in the blind side, you know, as a facilitator, I can see it. But the client really doesn't see it.
Right.
They don't know that they keep recreating that pattern.
Right.
So, again, that would be using, again, the explicit by you talking a little bit about that. But you're watching the experience with the horse in order for that light to be shown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, as a way to wrap up, what do you think, you know, after talking about all of these really wonderful concepts about what's really going on and how we can really help things shift for folks, what do you think is the most, and I know you're working with facilitators all the time, coaching them to deepen their practice. So from all of the folks that you work with and what you see a lot, what's the most important, say, quality or skill that we as facilitators could really be aware of bringing into our play with the horses for clients? What's the most important thing you'd say that you wish that people would really get good at?
To really know themselves and understand their own, we all have judgments, your own past, your own feelings, your own expectations, to be able to pause and to be able to understand when you've lost the connection. I always say to people, and this is a really good way to test it, is before you speak, ask yourself the question internally, is this for me or is this for them?
Mm.
If it's for you, it might not be the right time to say something.
Mm-hmm.
If it's for them, it might not also be the right time, but you can always ask that in a question, right? But if it's for you, a lot of times it'll be your ego or you're going to be afraid you're going to forget to say something. That's what I see people doing. They'll say, Kathleen, didn't you see such and such and so and so? I'm going, yeah, but it's not the right time to say something.
Yeah.
So I call it a page marker.
Uh-huh.
So I tell people, pay attention to the page markers because that's what's going to give you an opportunity to sort of maybe guide your client in the future. But slow it down.
Right. Well,
did that
I
answer
love,
the question?
Yeah, that was a lot of good answers. Any one of which is, really beautiful. So, well, I'm so glad we had this chance to talk about this really important thing, underpinnings of what's really going on when we're playing with the horses and how this change is really happening in the brain. And so I think this is really important for all of us to have a better grasp on. So thank you for bringing this new awareness, this new research to us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I want to honor all the people that are doing that, but most importantly, I want to honor all the horses that have been in my life and that are still here on this plane or that are in other realms because I feel them all the time, and I know that I'm with them, even though I can't physically always be with them.
Yeah, let's just take a big breath, a moment of breath, to breathe into our heart and just send that appreciation out to all the horses.
Yeah.
All over the globe and in all the spaces that have really helped all of us find a new way of being. So
and I see that you've got that on your website now. I think it's beautiful. So,
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
True. Yeah, so if people want to catch up with you and learn some more or take part in the beautiful mentorship programs that you have available to help people who've – my understanding of the mentorship is that these are often people who've already had some form of training, but then you're helping them take it to the next level. Is that right?
Yes, but I also have people that haven't necessarily had this training. They have to have a certain amount of horse experience. I can't do that on the phone. Thank you very much. I might line them up with somebody, you know, if they're in an area where I know people because I have the privilege of knowing a lot of people.
Right.
But I also, so what I know that I love to do is I love to help them integrate the work that they've been doing, whatever field it's in, with the horses.
Okay,
so
wonderful.
I do work with a lot of people that haven't had any formal training in this. And because I've designed it so that they have a lot of practice sessions and they have me, you know, helping them, coaching them through those, that they really get a good understanding of really how to go out and do the work.
Yeah. And so what sounds like what you're doing that's different that I think is so helpful and needed is that, one, it's individual, so they're getting your personal feedback.
Yeah.
And two, you do it over – I'm sure they can come to you, but you do a lot of it over the phone. Right,
yeah.
So that you can do this anywhere in the world and you can
and
get.
There's information about it on my website, and actually there's a woman named Beth from New Zealand who asked me to do this because she heard about me, and she lives in New Zealand. And we have a great love affair with each other in our hearts, but we've never met in person.
Right, on the phone.
And I had just had a bad accident where I fell down a flight of stairs and broke my ankle.
Mm.
So she asked me right at the right time because there was no way I was going to be traveling over to New Zealand then. And so I always give Beth credit for that. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Beth.
She asked that question, and because she asked that question, then I've continued to work with people that way. You know, maybe can't go to a program, time constraint or financial constraint or children or whatever, you know. So but I'm very particular about who I take on. Again, they have to have the horse experience because I can't teach them that on the phone. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thank Beth, too, because I think it's just a wonderful offering that's really needed. And I'm so glad you're filling that space that people can learn that way. And so if people are interested, of course, your link is sacredplaceofpossibility.com.
Uh-huh.
And you can follow up with Kathleen. And I just want to thank you again so much. It was such a joy having you. And I also would like to let our listeners know about our Healing with Horse Symposium that we're having in June in Denver, June 1st and 2nd, 2013, where we're going to do the same sorts of things, only in person, where we're going to gather to empower each other with new tools and ideas and activities and get to do some of our own personal work with the horses. So if you're interested, please check out our website for more on that. And until next time, may horse be with you. We'll see you later, Kathleen.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.